This is an ABC podcast.
It's hard to go a week without hearing a news story about how expensive it is to buy a property in Australia's cities. Sydney, Perth, Melbourne, Brisbane, we get it. It's impossible for young people. But a lot of us don't want to live in the city and still can't afford a home in the country. Actually, in some areas, it's worse in the bush. Hey, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack, and we're going to hear from people who are trying to crack into the housing market in rural and regional areas but can't. Also, a contraceptive pill for guys. What do you reckon? There's some promising research underway. We'll tell you how it'd work.
Hack.
This budget will be about the cost of living. It has to be. Australians are doing it tough at the moment.
On Triple J.
Right now, there's a whole bunch of journalists locked away in a room in Canberra getting the full budget rundown. Are you jealous? Do you wish you were there? Me neither, but hey, the budget is actually heaps important, especially so close to the election. And while the government's full spending plan won't be released until later, we do have a bit of an idea of what's in it. It's going to focus a lot on cost of living, which is a major issue for a lot of Australians right now. A temporary cut to the fuel excise is going to be announced. That would help bring prices down a bit. There'll also be one-off cash payments for some welfare recipients, extra money back at tax time, and a lot of money for national security as well. But what is the budget, I hear you say? Well, Hack's political reporter Claudia Long can explain.
You know how politics and money are two of those topics that you're not supposed to talk about? Well, strap yourself in because we're about to break a lot of social conventions. So talking government fiscal measures can be a little dry. But they have a massive impact on you, and we're going to keep it short, snappy, and just to what you need to know. Okay, so tonight the federal budget is going to become public, and you're going to be hearing a lot of words like
economy
and
dollars
from this guy.
Good afternoon.
He's the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg. So what is the federal budget? I hit up a guy who knows a thing or two about this whole situation. Could you just introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm James Cleanday, and I'm a reporter at the ABC.
James is underselling himself a bit here. He's a senior political journo who spent a lot of time going through budgets in Australia and covering them overseas as well. So I asked him, in 35 words or less, what is the federal budget?
Basically, the government collects taxes from all of us and it spends a lot of money. And once a year, at budget time, it accounts for all the things it spends money on.
And we're talking everything, from job seeker payments to uni funding, and also a lot of money for those nuclear submarines that might show up one day. Basically, this is like Christmas for political nerds around the country, because it gives us a good idea about what a government wants to spend its money on, and other important stuff too.
It also has a set of assumptions for the economy. For example, what it thinks unemployment will be, how much it thinks it'll take in from company tax, from profits, how much it'll take in from wages, all those kind of things.
So that's the money side of it. But there's one more thing.
The third thing that the budget really is it's a political show. It's a massive stage-managed event where the government can outline all its agenda items for the year ahead and spending promises, and then kind of show how it can account for those, how much it's going to cost you.
Tonight, we'll be hearing all about what the government wants to spend money on. And then on Thursday, you'll be hearing from this guy.
That's me.
He's Anthony Albanese, the Labor opposition leader who's gunning for the job of Prime Minister at the upcoming election in May. Oh, and just on that, actually, because we're going to the polls really soon, this budget is going to be a bit different. Because at this stage, a lot of it is just going to be big promises from both sides, but only the winner will get a chance to actually bring their big plans to life. And so a happy Nerd Christmas to all, and to all, a good night.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
Yeah, Nerd Christmas. Claudia Long there. She'll have the full breakdown of what's in the budget tomorrow on Hack. She's also going to be on breakfast tomorrow morning. So after 8:30, she'll have the rundown. We'll tell you what's in it. Hack.
I really can't afford to buy a house right now. That's what you get for buying all that avocado toast and Starbucks.
On Triple J. I think we can all agree the housing market in Australia is pretty cooked at the moment. But in some parts of regional Australia, prices are actually increasing faster than the capital cities. In the past few days, both the major parties have announced regional home loan guarantee schemes. They're hoping that'll help young people buy their first property. If you're saving to buy a place in the bush, I want to hear your stories. Call in 1300 055 36. You can message in as well, 0439 757 555, because we're hearing it's so hard for a lot of people. They're priced out. They can't get in. First, here's Ellie Grounds to run you through it.
Yeah, I just feel like I need to add a year every time I just look at the prices. I'm like, okay, 5 years is good. Oh, maybe it's 7 years. Oh, maybe 10 years. Like, it's scary because I would love to own a house. That is a dream.
This is Emily. She's 23 and lives in Gilgandra in country New South Wales. She's saving to buy a house in Orange, 2.5 hours away, where her partner lives and where there are more job opportunities. But the problem is, when she jumps on real estate sites to look at places in Orange, they're 3 to 4 times the price of a place in Gilgandra.
Yeah, Orange is definitely the dream, but will we get there? I don't know.
She says the increase in house prices over the last couple of years has been crazy.
For where it is, and Orange is beautiful, but it's not Sydney. There are still so many resources missing. Why would I be paying the price of a Sydney house in regional?
In just 12 months from January last year to January this year, median dwelling prices across regional Australia jumped 26.1%. So it's no wonder that
too many younger Australians in particular simply can't access the housing market to get into it.
If you're thinking, yes, that's me, I'll never be able to afford a house in regional Australia, we have some news for you. Both our major parties have announced schemes they hope are going to help you land that sold sticker on your very own home.
Under our plan, 10,000 first home buyers will save up to $32,000 in mortgage insurance, be able to secure a home with a deposit as low as 5%, with the government guaranteeing up to 15% of the purchase price.
That's Opposition Leader Anthony Albanese announcing on Friday the Regional First Home Buyers Support Scheme that his party, Labor, will introduce if it wins the federal election. And then yesterday, the government announced that they're including a similar scheme in today's federal budget.
10,000 places, a regional home guarantee, which will just be for the regions, to assist people to purchase or build a new home in a regional area again with a deposit of just 5%.
There's a bit of property talk in there, so let's break it down. Most people who want to buy a house need to loan money from a bank, but before a bank will give you a mortgage, you need to have saved a deposit. People usually aim for a 10% deposit, but if your deposit is less than 20%, banks then chuck this fee on top called lender's mortgage insurance. It's to cover them in case you can't pay your loan back. And that's where these guarantees come in.
The loan guarantee simply says if you default, the government's going to help work out how to get that loan repaid and how the bank can then offload that property and relieve itself of risk.
Dr. Kim Horton is the chief economist at the Regional Australia Institute and knows a lot about how cooked finding somewhere to live in regional Australia can sometimes be. He was excited about the guarantee announcements, but says in the really hot regional markets, like the Gold or Sunshine Coasts, Newcastle, the Illawarra or Victoria's Surf Coast, the schemes could actually make it harder to buy a place.
We know that some places, if you make it more easy for some people to get finance, it could just drive prices up further in the markets that are already strong.
Both parties are also only promising to guarantee you up to a 20% deposit, which doesn't work for some places where banks want you to stump up way more.
We've had people in our community who have received pre-approval for $1 million in Brisbane and can't get even less than half of that in Quilpie.
Justin Hancock is the CEO of the Quilpie Shire Council in southwest Queensland. He says there are young people in the area with well-paid, stable jobs who have a 20% deposit saved and can definitely pay off a loan. But banks ask for deposits of 30, 40 or sometimes even 50%.
If they were in Brisbane, Toowoomba, Rockhampton or Cairns, would have no problem securing a loan.
He says the banks claim giving a mortgage to someone in remote Australia is a risky investment because it's a small population and they're worried about resale potential.
When it comes to regional Queensland, the banks don't want a bar of it.
Emily, who you heard from earlier, reckons the guarantees will definitely help some people in regional Australia buy a house, but the policies come with price caps. For a place like Orange, the property can't be more than 600 grand for you to be eligible. And Emily says that's a problem because the prices are so crazy, it automatically rules out heaps of houses.
You know, you could buy an amazing house in Gill for $600,000, but in Orange, that's below the median. And I understand that we're young and I understand that it is first home buyers, But, you know, I don't really want to have to buy another house in 10, 15 years' time if I want a family and I need more rooms.
Hack on Triple J.
Ellie Grounds with that story. It's kicking off on the text line. A lot of you are messaging in with your thoughts. Someone says, it's becoming almost impossible to buy a house in regional areas for young people. I'm 25 with a mid six-figure deposit. I still get outbid constantly. Another person says, it's hard to buy in the country because city slickers are buying the houses. And Reese says, I'm 23 and have bought my second property. All these other people are sooking about not being able to get into the market, but aren't willing to work hard for it. They just want a handout. Oh, Reese, that's your opinion. We've got Ro on the line in Bendigo. Ro, you're in regional Victoria. Are you looking for a house?
Yeah, that's correct. I've been looking for a house with my partner and my family for probably since pre-COVID. And we were on the fence. We're like, okay, we've got the deposit. We're ready to get it. And then COVID hit and obviously prices went up and up and up and they didn't come down. And so what we were looking at originally were $200,000 and $300,000 houses, which are now going for $500,000. Yeah. We've just been priced out of it. There's no way. Places were selling before they were even coming on the market. It turned into a giant joke in the area that people from Melbourne were snapping up properties without even looking at them. And they were leaving it nothing for everyone who was already here.
Yeah, that's what we're hearing, Ro. A lot of those regional areas just outside the big cities. Tess from Robertson says, the rural region I live in is now too expensive for anyone who grew up in the area to buy or rent. Basically, only wealthy people moving from Sydney can afford property there, especially retirees buying weekenders. Ro, thank you very much for calling in with your experience. I'm going to go to someone now who can tell us a bit more about this. Brendan Coates is with me. He's from the Grattan Institute, which is a think tank that looks at where Australia is heading in the future. Brendan, thanks for coming on Hack.
Thanks for having me.
We're seeing so many young people in the bush struggling to buy a home, as we just heard. It can be worse than the cities in some areas. Is this a problem that we've been seeing for a while?
That's right. The house prices have been rising faster in a lot of regional areas, particularly in places in New South Wales. You know, your package mentioned Orange. House prices in Orange are up 37% in the last 12 months. You know, and it's an extraordinary increase. And so with COVID, with the shift to remote work, with people leaving the cities, we've seen for the first time in a long time populations moving out of the city. So we've had net outbound migration from cities like Melbourne and Sydney. It's led to more demand for housing in regional areas, and it takes time to respond, for those markets to respond. And so prices have gone up and up, particularly with interest rates falling. And we are where we are today, where housing is just incredibly expensive in a lot of regional areas today.
Both the government and the opposition have announced policies to help with this, so young people don't have to save as much of a deposit. Do you reckon it'll work?
Look, it'll certainly help some people into home ownership. So the deposit hurdle, you know, as your package talked about, is often the main constraint for a lot of young people. You know, trying to save a 20% deposit so you don't have to pay lenders mortgage insurance, which, you know, can run to $20,000, $30,000, is a big constraint. And so, you know, if you're talking about our major cities and even some of the regions, you're talking about 10 years to save the average deposit for the average house, assuming you're on the average income and you're saving, say, 15% of your income every year. That's a long time to wait. So these schemes will help some people into the market. Some people will come in earlier, but they can be a double-edged sword because they also add to the demand for housing and they can push up prices. So I think our main criticism of both the scheme announced by the Federal Labor Party and the Coalition's existing scheme that they're expanding is that they're probably too broad. You know, we're talking about incomes of 125,000 singles, yeah. 200,000 couples. It's only cutting out, say, the top 10 to 15% of people. And that's going to add a lot to demand.
Yeah. Brendan, we're hearing so much from other people messaging in. Someone says, housing affordability is causing me so much anxiety. I just can't believe how crazy everything's changed in 2 years. Ryan says, deposit, deposit, deposit. What good is a deposit of 5% when the repayments are $1,000 a week and young people can't earn that much a week just for a mortgage? We're going to go to someone else who's called in. Gypsy is on the line from regional Victoria. Gypsy, what's been your experience?
Yeah, g'day. So my experience is I'm originally from Bairnsdale, and at about the start of 2020, my partner and I were looking to get a house, but we just needed to get that little bit more financing there. By the time we did, we were already priced out of the market. So, you know, it was around the 250,000 to 300,000 houses that we were looking at. And within 6 months, it shot up by another 50,000 and then another 50,000. And it's absolutely ridiculous. So we decided, you know, go into the rental market for a little bit until things cool down. But there's absolutely no rentals in Bairnsdale. You know, you apply for a house there and there's probably between 50 to 80 people applying for each house. And it's just next to impossible. So I'm actually an hour away from my hometown now. And it's just, you know, the cost of petrol on top of being that far away from your support networks, it's just getting really hard.
Oh, yeah. It sounds crazy. And, Gypsy, we're hearing this so much from people right across the country, not just in regional Victoria, but all over the place. Thank you so much for calling in. Brendan Coates from the Grattan Institute is with me. Brendan, a lot of young people are probably thinking, oh, maybe I've just got to wait. Surely the prices will come down, the bubble will burst or something. Is it likely that that's going to happen?
Well, if you think about what's driven prices up so much in the last 2 years, there's a couple of things. One is people shifting more to working from home because a lot of people have shifted to remote work. I think that's probably going to persist. But the other big factor is interest rates. So, you know, there's work done by the Reserve Bank, so our central bank, that basically suggests a cutting interest rates by a percentage point, which is roughly what the Reserve Bank did during COVID, sees house prices rise by something like 25%. So if rates rise, it is likely we would see some of those gains be reversed. So prices probably be lower because people, if you think about it, you know, your ability to how much you can borrow depends on obviously deposit, but also what the interest payments are going to be. And if those payments are less or the interest rate's less, then you can afford to borrow more. And so it is likely that house prices will probably fall somewhat as interest rates start to rise, as they are expected to start doing so later this year.
Right, okay. Well, a lot of people are probably looking forward to that, maybe if it happens. Somebody on the text line says, I was shocked our house has been valued at double what we bought it for 5 years ago. I feel so sorry for those attempting to get their foot in the market. Guy from Ballina is on the line now. And Guy, you've got a similar kind of story about house prices just increasing pretty dramatically.
Yeah, so we bought ours for $330,000 about 2 years ago in our block, and we were going through the process, and we got offered about 5 months ago $620,000 just for the block.
What? That's,
you know, so, and we told them to, yeah, we're not going ahead. We're going to have our family home, but I get it. I understand. Like, we had to go. My father-in-law had to go guarantor for us.
Yeah.
To get the home, you know. So I understand where I'm coming from. We had like $100,000 plus as a deposit, and we were still struggling to get into the market around the area to stay in the area for my partner's family, to stay around her family.
Yeah, look, Guy, it's crazy, and a lot of people would be having to get their parents to come and help out. That's just something that we're seeing that's pretty normal these days. Thanks very much for calling in. We're going to go back to Brendan Coates. And Brendan, what do you think we should be seeing? Like you mentioned before, maybe the governments need to focus on people who are much lower income earners rather than people who'd be probably getting into the market anyway.
That's right. So what Guy mentioned there is kind of really poignant, which is that, we, you know, for a lot of people, the bank of mum and dad is the extra support they use to get into the market. And what we're seeing is that those that don't have access to the bank of mum and dad, they're the ones increasingly that are not buying. So home ownership has halved amongst younger, poorer Australians. So if you go back 30, 40 years, more than half of young people are on lower incomes own their own homes. Now that number, you know, is just over a quarter. And what it means is that we probably need to pull out all stops if we're going to make housing more affordable. There's no one single solution to this. The sort of schemes the government has and the opposition have announced, they're not bad in and of themselves in the sense that, you know, they're actually the government acting as the bank of mum and dad, but they do need to be targeted probably at those that will struggle otherwise. Otherwise, you risk just raising prices. And beyond that, there are a host of things governments could do to make housing more affordable. You know, they could change negative gearing in the capital gains tax discount, which would reduce prices.
Yeah.
They could look at building more supply by relaxing planning rules. The challenge is that those things involve losers. Someone loses in that process. Someone's house price falls. And as we saw from the last election, now both sides of politics seem pretty unwilling to go back there again.
All right. Well, Brendan Coates from the Grattan Institute, we appreciate your insight. Thanks very much for coming on Hack.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Hack.
Men will be happy to take control of contraception.
On Triple J.
When it comes to contraception, women are definitely carrying the biggest burden, whether it's the pill, IUDs, patches. Most contraceptives are aimed at women, and they come with side effects. There's not a lot for men. It's condoms, vasectomies, or not having sex at all. So what if there was a pill men could take without side effects that stopped pregnancy? Well, scientists in the US have come up with a male contraceptive pill that's 99% effective in mice. It targets a protein that's key to sperm formation, so removing it dramatically reduces sperm count. Of course, it's still early days, but so far things are looking pretty good. I've actually got two members of the team working on this with me now from the University of Minnesota, Professor Gunda George and researcher Abdullah Al-Noman. Thank you very much for coming on Hack. Professor George, I might start with you. What is this male contraceptive pill?
Yeah, so what we would like to do is to provide men and couples with additional opportunity for contraception and family planning. And so this would perhaps, I guess, if everything works out, be the first time that a non-hormonal male contraceptive agent would be tested in humans. So that's what the goal is at this point in time. And if we get FDA approval for the clinical trial and everything works out and we see the kind of phenomenon we saw in the animal studies, then I guess we would be off and hopefully market a new male contraceptive agent sometime in the future.
Yeah, it's a really exciting prospect. Does it work a lot differently to the female contraceptive pill?
Yes, it does. The female contraceptive pill is based on hormonal regulation. And that has been tried for male contraception as well for a very long time, but it really hasn't made it, you know, to market. Many clinical trials have been, conducted, but there are a number of side effects, and so that has prevented this from moving forward. And so we're working on a different approach, which is non-hormonal, so we're not messing up the man's hormonal, homeostasis. And so that, I think, we think has maybe a better chance of not having side effects. And in terms of side effects, you have to remember that we're not treating a disease. You know, this would be taken by healthy, probably mostly young adults. And so we have to make sure that this is exceedingly safe.
Has there been much research into a male contraceptive pill in the past?
So, yeah, there's been a lot of effort on developing male contraceptive, but mostly those are targeted on hormone, the testosterone, male sex hormone. And our lab has been working on some of the non-hormonal pathway, like this project we are working on a target called retinoic acid receptor alpha. It's a non-hormonal target. So this is the most promising looking non-hormonal pathway so far.
You've done the trials on the mice that were 99% effective. What's next in the process?
Typically, before going into human, we need to prove to the FDA that this candidate is safe. So we have to test it in two different species, either a rat and dog or any two different species. And then if it looks safe there, then it goes to human in very low dose to prove the safety. And once safety is established, then we could increase the dose and test for the efficacy in the later trials.
Okay. And if that all happened, if that all went according to plan with clinical trials, when could we see, this be marketed?
You know, the answer has been always 10 years, okay? But I'm optimistic, maybe over-optimistic. But I think if we, see real good safety data in the upcoming toxicology tests as well as in the clinic, I think this could actually be moved a little faster. And so it's maybe a little bit over optimistic, but I would say 5 years, 6 years, perhaps.
So this is temporary, right? So once men stop taking the pill, they become fertile again?
Yeah, so the animal studies did show that, first of all, there was an induction of infertility, so they stopped producing offspring. When the drug was discontinued, then fertility came back. And after, about 4 to 6 weeks, they were fully fertile again.
And has there been much development in contraceptives in recent decades, or have we just kind of stuck with what we have because it's been working?
Yeah, I would say, I'm not really an expert in all of what is done on the female side, but there have been some recent developments in vaginal contraceptive agents. There's still a need for contraception for both male and female. And, another area of interest of ours, which, we could pursue in the future, is a female non-hormonal contraception. Because, again, some women do not tolerate some of the side effects of the current hormonal birth control pill. And so if we could develop also a non-hormonal pill for women, I think that would be of a great advantage also to women and to couples to plan their, families.
Thank you very much for your time and for joining us on Hack.
Our pleasure.
Hack. On Triple J.
Professor Gunda George and researcher Abdullah Al-Norman from the University of Minnesota there. And there's a lot of support for this on the text line. We'll keep track of it for you. Somebody says when this goes on sale, it should have the slogan, Ride Me Daddy. Ugh.
Hack.
Hopefully it's not going to be a big one like a couple of weeks ago.
Everything's got to pack up because this will go under again.
We're not staying this time. Not going on the roof again.
On Triple J.
Well, look, just a few weeks after communities in northern New South Wales were devastated by floods, rivers have been on the rise again, heavy rains hammering parts of Australia's east coast. People were evacuating in Lismore again. The difference now is the town's CBD is a bit of a ghost town with shops empty and still no power in a lot of places. So what's happening on the ground? Well, someone who can tell us is the former mayor of Lismore, Vanessa Eakins. She's with me now. G'day, Vanessa.
Good afternoon.
What's the situation in Lismore right now?
Well, it's just started raining heavily again, but we're predicting a moderate flood at the moment. The river's below 8 metres and we're expecting it to peak at 8 p.m. this evening at about 8.4 metres, which is below, it's a moderate flood. So the evacuation order has lifted for the CBD and we're still waiting to hear what happens in north and south Lismore. But as you know, after the previous floods, everyone's had to leave their homes down in the floodplain and strip out the walls and kitchens. So some people were camping in houses with no power or sewer or water, and other people had moved caravans onto their properties so they could start the work of rebuilding. So those caravans have had to be pulled out and the evacuation centre was opened again. But it was a very tense evening last night with the really heavy rain, and of course the dark makes it even more uncertain about what's happening.
Yeah, I bet. And Vanessa, we did hear that some areas have been, of people who've been evacuated are being allowed to return, which sounds positive, but I guess it's still a wait and see situation.
It's still a wait and see, yeah. We've got to see what happens tonight with the weather.
We've just got 30 seconds left, Vanessa, but are people living with this underlying anxiety that something else is going to happen?
Our community has been traumatised by this event. At the moment, we're running on adrenaline and we haven't really had the opportunity to talk as a community about what this means for us.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, obviously everyone is thinking about, northern New South Wales right now. It's been such a horrible time. Vanessa Eakins, councillor in Lismore, thank you very much for coming on Hack.
Thank you.
Hack. On Triple J.
And that's the former mayor of Lismore, Vanessa Eakins there. That's all we've got time for on the Hack Podcast for now. I'll catch you next time.